Okay, so on the way to the wedding yesterday, I was listening to a share by one of my rebbeim, Rabbi Clapper. He made a point that I just thought was very, very interesting in relation to the parsha, so I wanted to share it with you. Okay. When you read through this parsha, you read through the truth is much of Dvarim. What you remember, if you discover if you pay attention, is that the way we experience halacha nowadays is very much not the way the halacha is presented in the Torah. Right? We experience halacha as fundamentally in the more, as Lira Betnitsky would put it in her book, as religion in the Christian sense. Right? But it's divided, therefore, from politics, right? It's right. The Christian idea of religion is very different than, let's say, a Jewish idea of religion or a Muslim idea of religion, for that matter, where religion is comprehensive in the sense that it also includes politics and economics. Well,
Judaism does, though.
That's what I just said.
Oh, I thought you said it doesn't.
No, it does, but we don't experience it that way because we live, definitely if you live in you know, Chutz Lard, but even if you live in Israel, because it's not being run al pi halacha, so it doesn't have that, right? It just doesn't have that effect, right? So you open up...
The chief rabbinate the way that they do things.
So the chief rabbinate, so in Israel it's a little bit less clear because there isn't really separation of church and state. But again, the chief rabbinate has very limited authority, right? It has authority over marriage, which admittedly is a big deal, and it has authority over, status issues and over kashrus, which is weakened, but it doesn't, even though there are bat din that you can go to and are legally recognized, the economy isn't run under the auspices. That's what I mean, right? Meaning it's not holistic, right? It has obviously more impact, but it's not holistic. Now, that's obvious. That's an obvious point. But this, what hadn't quite thought of in this way is the following. We talked about yesterday the Ron, right? The Ron makes the point that the role of judges, let's see if you guys remember, the role of shoftim is what?
To uphold the moral integrity.
So there's two roles, right? There's to up, right? There's pragmatic, right? To make sure there's order, and then there is to represent the values. Now, the truth is, I oversimplify the Ron, because the Ron actually doesn't say that those are the two roles of the courts. He says those are the two roles of government, and the Ron divides between Sanhedrin, which he thinks their role is to represent the role, the values of God, and therefore is not always practical, right? And he notes, but halacha, right, is actually quite limited in terms of what it impacts, so what do you do in terms of practical government? So the Ron argues that that's the role of the next mitzvah in his parsha, which is the king. Right, and the Ron actually divides, and he says, listen, practical governance is under the king, and that's why the king is not bound by the limited powers of halacha, of the Sanhedrin, right, and he has a lot more room to negotiate, and he can do what's called Mishpat Melech, right, he can do what is necessary under the powers of the king, halachically recognized, even though it doesn't come directly, right? It's not dictated by halacha, and Sanhedrin is more circumscribed, and therefore, so for example, if someone commits a crime, and Sanhedrin wants to punish them, so what do you need? You need two witnesses, you need hasra'a, right, you need warning in advance, it's very, very hard to actually put someone to death in court. But what if you have someone who's a rampant murderer who is just very good at, you know, not saying when two witnesses come and say, don't kill him because if you do, put to the death penalty, he just says, right, nothing. In halacha, does he get put to death? No, he has to actually verbalize, right, a response to their warning, yes. He needs to respond, I'm doing it so that I'll be punished. So if he doesn't, he could be a mass murderer in front of witnesses and just every time he just says,
You need warning. Acknowledgement of the warning.
So he could get out of it. So what are you going to do? You're going to let the guy run rampant? So the Ron says, no, that's where the king comes in, right? Sanhedrin, now the Ron's thesis is actually quite radical, which is that the Sanhedrin is supposed to be limited in their powers, right? Because they're manifesting God's values and his justice, the fact that they actually can't implement things, a lot is actually built into the fabric of what they are. Now, many people disagree with the Ron at that point. And the Abarbanel, for example, says, no. The Ron is right in his taxonomy, right, of the two roles of government, but he's wrong in saying that Sanhedrin does one, right, expresses the ideal values, even if it's not practical, and the king does everything practical, says no. The Gemara, right, extensive sugyas in Sanhedrin, Daf and Vav, say that if necessary, Beit Din Makin Ve'onshin Shlom and Adin. Beit Din also has that power. Okay, now all of those are things I've thought about before. Now we've shared a few ideas in the Parsha, but the last point I want to make, and this is what I found very fascinating and hadn't thought about, is there's another consequence to this reality, that we don't live in a society in which all these roles of government are under the auspices of halakha, whether you think it's as the Abarbanel would have it under Sanhedrin, or as the Ran would have it under Sanhedrin and Melech. And that is that, think about how much political philosophy do you know? Rudy probably knows more than the rest of you, right? So, right, what is the fundamental insight of variants of the social contract theory?
You mean the social contract theory meaning that, like, you know, the government is meant to serve the people?
Yeah, but why? There's a prior, they agree to it. Why do they agree to it? And why do they agree to it? Very good, right? The idea is that prior to government, life is nasty, brutish, and short. So we willingly give up some of our freedoms, right? Right. And what's the insight of that theory, of that part of the theory anyways, is that in order to live a reasonable life, you must give up certain freedoms, because at the end of the day, if you didn't, right, you wouldn't really be free, right? If there was absolute anarchy and people could just steal your property and kill you, even though there's no law, you're not actually free because, right, you can't, you're not free to own property, you're not free to be safe, right? There is that balance where you give up freedom in order to be able to live a reasonable life in which you actually have freedoms, right? There's that right, that's the, one of the fundamental claims of social contract theory. One of the costs of not living in a society ordered by halakha is that we don't experience halakha, the strictures of halakha, as freeing.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? If there was no law of the land, the only law was halakha, so halakha would fill that role, right? It would keep us safe, and therefore some of the laws that are restricting of halakha would also be freeing. But when you live in a society when that role is taken by the American government, or even the Israeli government, which is secular, so how do you experience halakha? What is halakha's role? Right, but what does it do? It restricts you, right? And that actually warps the way that we think about halakha. The fact that the freeing role of law is taken by the secular government, which leaves halakha to only restrict us. So, right, and one of the, and I never really thought of the fact that, yes, the fact that we have, right, in an ideal Torah society, Torah has to fulfill all those roles. And therefore, yes, it's strictures, but as we know from social contract theory, sometimes we're willing to give up on things. And if, you know, if we also experience halakha as what is responsible for making sure that people don't kill us and don't steal our property and the like, right, we would realize that the strictures of halakha are freeing in the way that having a well-ordered society is freeing. But one of the costs of living in a world in which halakha has been relegated to the religious sphere in the sense I talked about at the beginning is that we tend to, right, we run the risk of feeling that halakha is only constraining because that other role that halakha in a holistic, right, halakhic society would fill is, right, is outsourced to the American government, the Canadian government, the Israeli secular government, whatever the case may be. And that, I think, is a really important point, is that, you know, I think all of us have moments where we struggle with halakha, right, because we feel that it's constraining. And, of course, it's constraining. And, yes, it's more constraining than maybe a secular government because, yes, it's legitimate that God has demands on us, right? But the fact that what exacerbates the point is that the role of limitations as freeing you to live a good life, halakha in an halakhic society would also fulfill that role, but it doesn't in our society, and therefore what we experience of halakha is not that. Now, that doesn't mean it's not meaningful, and doesn't mean you don't find value in it, but it does run the risk that if you don't think about it, you forget what a fully halakhic life would be capable of doing for you. We have a taste of it, for sure.
You know,
I feel very free now that I'm here, that I can literally walk into the mall, and now that I've looked at all the stores, I don't really have to worry about exposure.
So, right, but that's...
That's a very freeing thing.
Well, it's a freeing thing, but in the, right, I mean, but the fact that, yes, that Israel is, you know, a kosher society is freeing for us because we're already accept halacha, right? But, right, exactly, right, it's freeing, right, I mean, I really experienced, like, it didn't hit me how much that was, what Rudy said was true until I went to America over the summer, because here, right, like, you know, I went from, when I lived in America, so, you know, you learn, you check labels, and whenever I came to Israel, you don't really check labels, I mean, here and there, like, okay, which hex are you going to hold of, but mostly in the store, everything is fine, I mean, you know, like, meats, okay, you know you have to look, like, depending on what hashgacha you want to hold of, but, like, right, then my kids were diagnosed with celiac. So now, look, everything's kosher, but now I have to look for the gluten-free. Fine, I'm used to looking at labels, no big deal. Then I went to America, and pitom, I have to look for two labels, right? And that is a nightmare, right? Because you find, oh, that's kosher, but it's not gluten-free. Oh, that's gluten-free, but it's not kosher, right? I agree with you, but that's in light of restrictions. What the point that I hadn't thought about is, right, the restrictions that everybody understands are necessary to living a free life. Right, halacha in a halachic society has that role, but it, right,
would not necessarily guarantee us certain things that we need in a modern society.
Okay, leave that, but the basics, right, to protect our bodies, to protect our money, right, to protect, right, don't kill, don't steal, all that is, right, in a halachic society, the responsibility of the halachic system, right, in America. It's the responsibility of the American government, so halacha doesn't get to, right, play that role, so we forget that that's part of its role, right? So we experience only a part of halacha, and that insight, I thought, was just very important to think about when you read Shoftim, where it's very clear that the, right, what's being described is Shoftim, Melech, right, the laws of war, right, all those things that we don't really think about as being, right, the primary of halacha, obviously in halacha society, is, because that's exactly the point. It's a holistic legal system, and in a holistic legal system, restrictions are part and parcel of what's also freeing.
Wait, so does Israel follow rules of war laid out in Shoftim?
No. What Israel does is a long story. Maybe we'll talk about it another time. But I'm already over time, so...